it's a great sound, isn't it? Some say it's the sound of a group that has achieved overnight success. But don't you believe it.
It took the Beatles over 5 years to become an overnight success. And much like the title of their first motion picture, it was indeed a hard day's night. John Lennon, who almost was sidetracked into an art career, by the way, must be credited not only with initiating the Beatles, but also as the one member who never gave up hope of success despite many adversities. And he was always the rallying point for regroupings. John Lennon, whose whole family was musically inclined, was also the first to form a group and called it the Quarrymen. Paul McCartney soon joined John's Quarrymen, thereby earning the title of Beatle-in-waiting number two. That the world never caught on to a craze called Quarryman mania is evidence that the magic sound was not yet formed. The Quarrymen, originally five in number, dwindled down to John and Paul. But under the new name, the Nerk Twins, there was still disillusionment. With musical idols Buddy Holly and the Crickets, George Harrison was the next to join John and Paul, becoming Beatle-in-waiting number three. With George, the new group name became John and the Moondogs, but no Moondog mania. By now, the skiffle craze was dimming, and with it, the hopes of the Moondogs, who were still in their skiffle apprenticeship at a time when skiffle journeymen couldn't find work. While still working on new ideas for sound, and some moral support, too, from better-known Liverpool groups, John Lennon introduced the name Beatle.
But who came up with the final name Beatle, spelled with the B-E-A-T? Paul McCartney explains the origin.
John got the name Beatles in a vision ages ago, you know, when we needed a name, and everybody was thinking of a name, and he thought of Beatles.
Why the B-E-A instead of the B-E-A?
Well, naturally, you know.
Well, you know, if they left it with B-double-E, it was hard enough getting people to understand why it was B-E-A, never mind.
For a time, the name was softened to Silver Beatles, and with various other artists joining and leaving the group, John, Paul, and George were getting closer and closer to that magic door, which one day was to suddenly fly open and lift them from a Liverpool cellar and carry them before a world spotlight so bright it would leave their image permanently embedded in entertainment history. The Beatles like to be thought of as fun-loving, devil-may-care, non-conforming, life-loving quartet, which is more often disjointed than jointed. But while they may have neither interest nor ability in booking their own engagements or counting profits, they've consistently displayed that they take their music seriously, themselves lightly, and world acclaim moderately. Not even their success-swelled bank account seemed to phase their basic down-to-earth outlook. Even with full knowledge that critics and friends by the legion are scampering, clawing, begging for tidbits of information, any information on how they formed, how they dress, they take it casually.
John Lennon, for instance, when asked the technical question of how long it took them to develop the Beatles sound from its parent skiffle beat, answered,
Over a period of about 6 months, I think, or was it a year?
It was a bit longer, John.
You forget, cause... I know I met Paul first, and he sort of joined this sort of group, and then George, and gradually changed till there was just us three.
But it really wasn't as easy as it sounds. Those last painful months before discovery were full of obstructions and barriers and disillusionment and disappointments. But if success seemed to elude the Beatles in their native Liverpool, several junkets to Hamburg, Germany worked well for both their pocketbook and spirit, particularly their last trip in which they achieved their first audience reaction, which was later to be called Beatlemania. The Germans were the first to feel Beatlemania. And this despite the fact that a good part of the Beatle act was spoofing everything from Nazis to Nietzsche and Aryans to agrarians. The Barbs, with noted Liverpudlian wit, were burned into Hamburg audiences between numbers and during numbers. Returning home to Liverpool, however, was somewhat of a disappointment, for their Hamburg success story hadn't reached home. For the boys, number 10 Matthew Street, the address of the popular Cavern Club, was as far away as number 10 Downing. About this same time, another Liverpool act, Merseyside, was achieving notable success, a group called Rory Storm and the Texans. Music historians would later pay particular note to a mournful-faced little drummer with the Texans, known to friends as Richie, but to the public as Ringo Starr. It wouldn't be long before Ringo would be Beatle number four. Lady Luck would be Beatle number five, and with the brilliant guiding hand of young Brian Epstein as their manager, the Beatles would soon lift off the Liverpool launch pad with enough force to put the entire music world into orbit.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before, and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me.
That's the sound that's rocked the music world, and in that world, music or jukeboxes which are equipped to accept coins in return for recorded Beatle entertainment feel the metallic waterfall of dimes, quarters, shillings, marks, pesos, francs, lira, yen, and other forms of national coin. And from the back of burro-driven ox carts in remote sections of Latin America to plush, air-conditioned, ultra-modern record emporiums of the continent, eager hands reach for each new Beatle record. Worldwide record sales reportedly have already exceeded the 30 million mark. Why? Why indeed? Certainly a key factor is Beatle manager Brian Epstein, who found the long-haired version of Aladdin's Lamp in a Liverpool cellar